Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. And like it's probably the only break we need as it happens. So we'll go from here. Let's get Dave Grenning rolling, and we'll get his view of the Cigar Mile. And I guess he and I can debate. I sent him a text yesterday. I said, "Best Cigar Mile ever." He said, "Well, it's not the best ever." I said, "Best Naira Mile." Maybe, ever is it? Huh? Right.
What's that now?
One of the best Naira miles.
It's a very good race, Steve. It's a terrific race. Hopefully, it gets the Graded Stakes Committee to correct their error of making it a Grade Two. This is a Grade One race. Should be a Grade One race. I don't care that it's run after the Breeders' Cup, which seems to be their mantra: no Grade One races after the Breeders' Cup, save the three that are run on
opening day,
Christmas.
Santa Anita. Yeah,
which seems to be more tilted as it, because it's racing and we have different views of things. That's probably considered the kickoff to 2025 more so than the end of 2024.
Yeah.
But that's neither here nor there. But it's a very solid race. We'll probably lose one horse at least. The law professor is likely to come out, and because of the strength of the race, and wait for the Queens County at the end of the month.
Interesting. Okay, so Rob going to hold off. All right. So that's
what it sounded like this morning, talking to him, following a Naira news report yesterday as well.
Very good. All right. So that would leave us with a field of 10, and I thought law professor was okay in there. But obviously, the principals with Bookham Dano, Mulligan, Locked, at post time, and then Senior Buscador. Senior Buscador probably the value in here, and certainly with the turn back. And if we look back to last year, Dave, I mean, didn't really his terrific year kind of started here?
Yeah, I would say his terrific quarter, right? This race, followed by the Pegasus, followed by the Saudi, and then Dubai.
Right.
All within like a 4-month period, he ran very well on the turn back. And, you thought a mile would be a little short for him, but when you're a closer, and the mile usually gives you the better pace scenario, so
yep,
he got to run his race, and I think that's sort of the gist here with the thinking to come back to New York for this race and hopefully get some pace and come late and see what see what kind of pace he can get.
What? How are you betting this? If you're betting.
I picked post time, bet post time in the Breeders' Cup, so I can't see why I should not go back to him here. He's run very well at Aqueduct. I think the one turn race fits him better than the two turns, which isn't to say that he doesn't run well around two turns, but the horse has been one of the more consistent race horses that we've seen all year. He's running some big races, he's running some not so big races, but he's always shown up. And his race in that mile was good. His race in the Whitney was really good, too. Probably, could make a case he should have been second in there, too. The only race that he didn't, I think the only race that was, the Westchester, I thought he could have run better. I know he was, second in there, too, but I thought he could have run a little bit better in that spot. But I think they learned a little something out of that race and have used it to their advantage. I think the outside post actually helps him in a race like this. And I would probably have to go back to him as well again this time, even if the price won't be nearly as nice as it was in the Breeders' Cup. Locke to me is the horse I really don't know what to do with, because I think he's a really nice horse, but he's only had the one race in a year. It was a solid effort for sure, but I don't know in a different net mile and a different Cigar Mile, I would say, I'd be all in. But in a race that came up kind of as strong as this one. I'm not sure what to do with him. Book him down, like post time, never runs a bad race. Seems to always find a little trouble, though. And the rail, I'm not thrilled with the rail, but look, Rat Ortiz can work out a solid enough trip from there. So those to me, I think, are the, and well, Mulliken, I mean, Mulliken, obviously, I guess the mile is the one question mark here for Mulliken. They opted to go, you know, they had the option after the four go to the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile or go to the sprint. They opted for the sprint because they didn't want to go two turns first time, which I get. If it was a one-turn mile, I think he would have run in there. But I guess my concern there is he's not much of a fan of kickback, so he's going to probably have to get going, and, you know, will he have to go too fast to, you know, to, and if he does, will he have anything left to hold off some talented closers?
Coastal Mission, who really never really runs a bad race.
He doesn't. That said, I thought the 49er was a little bit on the weak side in terms of competition. But it's a win over the track at the distance, so you can't knock that. He drops a few pounds. He carried 24 there. He's got 21 here. You know, he ran solid enough in the Parks Dirt Mile. You're right. Look, I'm not going to knock a horse that's 14 for 25 with 5 seconds. But I just thought, I think this is a bigger step up than maybe you would think generally from the 49 to the Cigar Mile.
Right.
This race came up pretty salty, and I don't think that race was that salty.
All right. Fair enough. The Cigar Mile, and I suppose there's an order of finish in here that gives pause for the Graded State Committee. Hammer's going to be with us next hour, and I'm going to let him riff on this. You know, because of course it's a rolling average, but you know, there's obviously some Grade One horses that if they fill out the try in here, it enhances the scoring to get the Cigar Mile back to a Grade One.
The thing is, to me, is that just based on what the decisions they make, they're not consistent in how they make these decisions, and they're just not. I mean, the Carter should have been a Grade Two way well before it was. And this race should stay a Grade One, and the Woodward, you can go back and forth on the Woodward, I guess, but, and the Vosburgh should never, the Vosburgh in like 2 or 3 years went from a 1 to a 3, and it's been won by Cody's Wish and Elite Power 2 of the last 3 years. You tell me what warranted it to go from a 2 to a 3 after being a 2 for like 2 years, 2 or 3 years, and then all of a sudden those were 2 of your winners, and it went to a 3. That to me made no sense. Didn't have to go back to a 1. But it should have stayed a 2. It did not have to go back to a 3. I don't think they employ these whatever qualifications, whatever the word you want to use, evenly in these races. And I think it's just evident by how they upgrade and downgrade races.
Well, but I'm going to let it's always a good topic, and Hammer can riff on it when he joins us at the top of hour three. Let's talk about the two-year-olds and the Remsen and the Demoiselle. And, you know, on Wednesday, Dave, Sid Fernando and I kind of talked about these in general terms, that, you know, the 9 furlong, the pendulum is swung toward, you know, an appreciation for horses running at this time of year at 9 furlongs. And it, you know, one thing that, you know, the long-term conversations I have with Sid Hillendale, you know, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, and the desire for, you know, Saturday horses, as they say, for classic runners, the pedigrees that are popular right now are geared toward that, and these horses making this trip at this time of year, to me, you know, kind of is a positive endorsement about you know what's going on from the breeding side of things, and you know, certainly the last couple of Remsens have been productive, and want to see that continue. It's always interesting to see which one, which horses are going to excel at this time of year going 9 furlongs.
It is. I don't know when I look at this group that anyone jumps off the page at me that says, boom, this is what they want. I guess the intriguing horse to me a little bit is Poster. I guess for the fact that these same outfit, Owen Hardy trainer, Godolphin owner, went turf to dirt last week with First Resort and won the Kentucky Jockey Club,
yep.
Which may not have been a great renewal of that race either. Now, the difference between that horse and Poster, who has just run on turf twice, is at least First Resort had some dirt form. I think he won a maiden race and also was second in the Saratoga Special, I believe. So there was some dirt form there. This horse doesn't have that, but talking to Owen Hardy, he thinks the horse is meant for dirt and meant for distance. And one of the reasons why he ran him on the grass is because of the distance. And he showed up both times and won nicely. So he's interesting to me. And, they reached out and got Flavian Pratt, who's on the precipice of tying or trying to pass a couple of stakes records here, if he can get lucky this weekend and maybe sometime in the rest of December. So he's the interesting horse to me. I'll look at him as terms of how they bet this race. Key Waiting for Chad. Look, Chad's come up just the short in a couple of races, in a couple of Remsens. Zandon a few years ago, Sierra Leone last year. I don't know if Key Waiting is a definite mile and an eighth horse. Instagram Desire tried a mile and eighth twice and got beat both times. And the bottom side didn't really tell me much about the pedigree going long either. So I don't know. I thought his maiden, he ran in that Saratoga maiden race on Traverse Day maiden race at Saratoga, which turned out to be fairly productive. But I don't know if I want to take a short price on Key Waiting and try a mile and eighth the first time. Studley Do Right, who I think is an underappreciated horse for sure, but I didn't see anything in the Nashua that screamed to me, boy, does he want more ground? So I don't know. I guess I'll go with Poster. Going back to Chad Aviator Gee, with the 1 mile maiden race that proved pretty productive as well, off the turf, albeit. Now Cyclone State, who was second in that September 28th race, he's in an allowance race today at Aqueduct. We'll see if how he does there after breaking his maiden. But the second, third, and fourth place finishers in that 5-horse field all came back to win. Aviator Gee went back to the turf and just ran a so-so race. And his pedigree suggests that he will get the distance, which might give him an edge over his mate, Key Waiting. And then Tux, look, I'm never going to throw Bill Mott out, but, this is a big jump, 6.5 to a mile and eighth off one start. Which is not to say that Tux won't be a nice horse. I just don't know if he wants to mile and eighth tomorrow.
Well, I certainly agree with you about Poster, and we talked to Owen beginning of the week. There's a lot to like, and I'm rooting a little bit for Key Waiting just to take a natural, next step. I got him at 107-1 in that Derby future wager.
There you go.
Right? So,
yeah.
And you talk about underappreciated, Studley Do-Right, 197-1.
Yeah, maybe the people saw the same thing as I did. Just, again, in the Nashua, I just didn't see a horse coming out of that that says, yeah, let's go further.
Well, we'll defer for now to Jerry Robb on that topic, but the Remsen is going to go as the seventh in between the Remsen and the Cigar. We've got the Demoiselle, and we had Nick earlier. Nick, I won't say opinion is mixed on Mohima. Most people think that she's a slam dunk. Where do you shake out?
Yeah, look, I hate to say slam dunk in a 2-year-old stakes with 10 in it, but boy, does she look good in watching the replays of her races yesterday. She certainly looked like a filly that wants more ground. He's already got Brad Cox, that is. He's already got Immersive, 4-for-4, three-time Grade 1 winner. He's already got Good Gear, 4-for-4, golden, two-time stakes winner. And now this filly, again, another Munnings trying to stretch out, but there's Tappet on the bottom side, although the mare was all turf, Princess Carolina. it's hard for me to go against her because I just didn't think anyone else jumped off the page. Now, sort of being a hypocritical here a little bit is the mob horse in here, who's trying to do what Tux is trying to do in the Remsen, go a mile and eighth off one race at 6.5 furlongs. This one to me does have some pedigree to go the mile and an eighth. Beauty Reigns, the damn side, Tappet, Ilsa. Ilsa is from the family of Sweet Catamine and Sweet Way. So, I'm sorry, Life is Sweet. Life is Sweet. I just think this is the filly who will appreciate the distance, and we'll see. You know, I thought her debut was solid enough. It was hard fought, but it was good enough. You know, I think it gets her prepared to stretch out a bit. And then a bit of a mystery is Chad on the outside with Ballerina de Oro, pointing this horse for the Teppan, pointing this horse. He had a horse called Fully Subscribed, who I believe was pointing to this race. She got hurt. So in looking for a substitute, I think he landed on Ballerina de Oro based on how the filly was training, on the dirt, on the Belmont training track and galloping out. He's doing something he doesn't normally do. He's making a surface change and an equipment change all at once. I don't know if it's a confident move or it's, look, I want to find out sooner than later if I have a dirt horse here or do I need to go back to turf.
No, well, you got to do it at some point, so why not? This is as good a spot as any, and there'll be plenty of that with the turf season having finished a couple of weeks ago and everybody's hand basically being forced if you're going to stay in and around New York. Beyond the two-year-olds and beyond the Cigar Mile, the Gopher Wand, why was the Gopher Wand? Did you hear anything from the racing office as to why they put it early?
No, I didn't. I don't. I mean, I think, you know, Abe Rope did re-enter in the Go Scarlet Roses for tomorrow. But I mean, even if she's scratched, and I talked to Linda today, and she's still not sure what she's going to do. It still comes down to seven. It still seems like a decent race. I'm not sure. Maybe they know more than I do about who's staying and who's coming out. But it seemed to me that it could have been a nice all stakes pick four if you had put it somewhere else on the card. But,
yeah.
That's just me.
Well, and it's a strong. I with Nick, we went races 3 through 10 because there's a middle pick five, a mandatory force type pick five going races 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So there's a lot of attractive sequences, scattered throughout the card. Talk about the Gopher Wand because it's a nicely matched bunch.
It is. Look, Tizzy in the Sky loves Aqueduct. She probably prefers a mile and an eighth. But she did win a maiden race here going a mile by 5 3/4, which of her four wins, that's her least amount of margin of victory. She's won the other three races by 9 or more. So when you're angling for the horse for course angle, she fits that bill. Again, she probably would prefer the mile and an eighth, but she looks pretty salty in here for Todd, who does an excellent job off the layoff. I would probably be a little bit, again, comparative. You know, sometimes these older fillies, you know, they go to the sidelines after some bad form and they don't necessarily come back.
Yeah.
The same. And I'm wondering, how she'll come back. Got to carry, the whole kit and caboodle at 125 pounds. So I'm a little against her. I'm a little intrigued by a colt. Her last two races were really improvements off of what she had run before, numbers-wise. I know she was second to a stablemate Tough Street in a mile allowance race at Saratoga. And then, look, I guess you could say somebody had to be second to Idiomatic, and she was the one in the Spinster. But I thought she ran pretty well. I think she got a little further back than maybe she would have liked Chad would have liked at the start. But she came with a nice, solid run and did beat Candy for second. So, you know, I don't know how they'll bet this race, to be honest with you, but a colt looks of the two Chads. I think I would maybe lean toward a colt over a Shitta Booty, but just because I think Shitta Booty's mile races were okay, but she might be more of a 7/8 type of horse. But probably go with Tizzy in the Sky, but and you know, just to see the price differential between her and a colt, that would probably make my mind up.
All right. Any other anything else that needs fleshing out?
Not to the best of my knowledge.
How was the Grenning family Thanksgiving?
nice and quiet. Just watched football and did the usual eating, and then we went turkey, and we went to some friend's house for dessert, and game was game night, so we went up. It was a large crowd, though. It was a large field. It was games didn't go as swiftly as you'd like, but it's funny, you know, Thanksgiving used to be one of my busiest days. You used to have 3 steaks to recap and four steaks to preview. And this year I actually took the day and kind of the weekend off because there wasn't a whole lot going on at Aqueduct. So I got to sort of catch my breath a little bit Thanksgiving weekend. It was
nice.
It was enjoyable. I watched maybe, I might have seen 4 races.
Well, I there was some fun racing, and I was able to take in a little bit once I finished cooking. I don't know if you heard our pie discussion from the other day.
I did not. Sorry.
What, banana cream pie, yay or nay?
I like it, but I don't go seeking it. If it's there, I might have a slice. I think I'm a more traditionalist guy. I'm trying not to eat pie right now, but I did have a slice of apple pie with no ice cream. On Thanksgiving,
I had ice cream. I have to have the vanilla ice cream with the apple pie. We have our third pie beside an apple and pecan was a banana cream, and it created this whole firestorm.
It turns out
that there's a whole group amongst our generation that's either averse to banana cream pie or just have never experienced it. Seth Merrow even had the temerity to not like bananas. So it opened up a floodgate. You wouldn't believe the feedback I got. It's crazy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Banana pie gate. Wow.
Exactly. Banana cream pie gate. I didn't even venture further down the road to coconut cream, and which I don't understand at all. But
you know, it was funny. They were at the place I was at. There was a lot of talk about this chocolate mousse cake and how long that they had to wait to get it. It was at some famous bakery in Queens, and that they had to actually wait hours to get it. And I think people were eating it just because of that fact. Like you gotta have this pie. The guy waited. It was like a friend of a coworker of the friend. He said the guy waited 3 hours to get this pie. We gotta eat it. And I was like, all right. I had like a spoonful or maybe 2 spoonfuls of it. I was like, it's good. I wouldn't have waited 3 hours in line for it.
Now we have to flesh this out. We got to discover where this is. This is like the bakery in Philly where everybody waits in line for the pound cake. There's a famous little bakery in Philadelphia that people line up around the block until they run out of the pound cake.
The funny thing is with this pie is somebody said you could get the same pie in Costco for like half the price, and you wouldn't have to wait 3 hours for it. I said, and it probably doesn't taste a whole lot different.
Well,
I don't know if I created a firestorm with that comment, but I was like, wow, you know, I can go to Costco and get the same pie for $6.99, and you know, not, you know, just wait for the checkout lady or maybe self checkout. I'm gonna do that.
Well, and no sooner do I bring up the Philadelphia pound cake that I get I'm prompted that I'm talking about Stocks Bakery, which has got to be up around Fishtown. The Stocks Bakery for the famous pound cake, but we're gonna find out about your chocolate mousse cake.
Yeah, I'll get back to you when I can. Maybe it'll be a Christmas time thing. Well, if I can only wait 2 hours, maybe I'll go do it.
we never know around here. Dave Grenning, everybody. We'll talk to Dave in March of next year. Dave, happy New Year.
See you in Tampa.
Exactly. Are we going to a game? I want to go see the Phillies. I want to go to Clearwater and see the Phils.
We're up for that. I might have the family coming down the weekend, so I actually wound up buying Yankees tickets for the Monday after Tampa. I think I'm staying a couple days after. So I think I'm going to Yankees Tigers after the Monday after the Tampa Bay Derby, because I got one of these, you know, BOGO things in an email, like for Black Friday. So I said, even if I don't go, I'm sure I can, if for some reason they don't come down, I can get rid of these tickets.
No doubt about that. And I'll be up at OBS by then. And I'll try not to kidnap your sweatshirts.
Yeah, no, that was my fault. I knew I put him in the back seat and sat in the front and got out. You dropped me off after we went to dinner and I didn't get him out. So.
Dave Grenning, everybody, DRF Grenning, and actually, you may see me. You probably will see me before we got your Zando running back in 10 days or so. So I might be down for that.
Sounds good.
All right, Dave Grenning, folks. Thanks, Dave.
Thank you.
There we go. Let's press on. Scully. Scully's next. See what he's got. I wonder if, mostly, I'm going to guess he's doing, I guess he's done some New York. And the Turfway is a little quiet this opening. I should mention, I was very close to reaching out to Mike Welch. We'll have Welch, obviously, you know, all winter. There is the Alan Jerkins tomorrow at Gulfstream, and the 2 mile handicap. And there's there happens to be a very fun wrinkle to this year's Alan Jerkins. No surprise that the Grey Wizard is participating. It's actually the first time he's been in it, but you know, the Grey Wizard has pretty much become, you know, at least on the turf, as opposed to next on the main track. But when it comes to turf, the Grey Wizard is, you know, the American specialist. His half brother, the 3-year-old by Calix, and this one happens to be Chestnut, and of course the Grey Wizard is gray, being by Caravaggio and out of a Galileo mare. Well, the same Galileo mare has produced this 3-year-old Chestnut colt, who they've named the Ginger Wizard. So you got the half brothers. I love this. The half brothers are running tomorrow in the Jerkins. Grey Wizard is 2-1. Ginger Wizard 20-1. With Hector Diaz and Javier Castellano picks up the mount on the Grey Wizard. Yeah, kind of fun. Todd's got 6-, who's a horse that likes an extended route of ground and participated last year in that exciting. They ran 2 miles, and what'd you have, a 4-horse photo, right, last year? Right? Wasn't that, F5, McLovin, 6-, yeah. Yeah, you had that crazy finish. So, it's the nightcap, the 2-mile Alan Jerkins tomorrow. And there's a number of maiden races, a little bit of everything. Long on the grass, Florida breds, short. You got a first level allowance for 2-year-olds, going 7/8, probably a to some degree a audition maybe for the Holy Bull next month. Yeah, got to start thinking about that kind of thing. So no Mike Welch today, but soon we'll start folding Mike in. And I'll also mention, and actually I can save this for Hammer, really. I told you about the Starlet. Starlet is very competitive. You got 6 of the 7 are under 10-1. The Mawu for Baffert is the longest shot on the board at 10-1. Everybody else is 5-2, 7-2, 4-1, 4-1, etc. So, good group. We'll talk about it with Hammer next after we talk to Scully. Where is it? Come on, where's Scully? I didn't know we had more than one Scully. We'll see. I'm very curious what James's interests are for this week, and we also got to look at Twin Spires to see what some of the some of the fun options are, the offers, and, of course, more tournament action. James, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Yes, good to be back with you, and hope you had a good weekend.
How was your holiday? How was Thanksgiving?
It was a little hectic. And my mom was sick, and we had a little bit of a tough one this year. But she's doing good now, back home and everything. So yeah, everything's going well now, and did get to watch some races. You know, obviously had a huge weekend, closing weekend at Churchill Downs, and watched the videos of the Del Mar Stakes, the Hollywood Derby, and the Matriarch. So it was good racing then, and obviously got to this racing in Aqueduct this weekend, highlighting it. But we got Oaklawn opening today, and Turfway opened Wednesday. So it's still a lot going on horse racing wise,
for sure. Regarding the opening at Oaklawn, you got a 25% double down opt-in and hit two doubles and receive a 25% profit boost on all double wagers. This is every Friday in December, so we got these next 3 weeks, today and these next 3 weeks. The Oaklawn double down. You got a $10 money back on your first single horse win bet in the Cigar Mile if your horse runs second or.
We're going to do that money back for Turfway Select races. I think they're doing like up to four races nice. Card there. We're going to have these late pick five hitted and split it promos going on at Aqueduct, Fairgrounds, and Gulfstream. Check the details, but we're either giving away a bunch of free cash or a whole lot of wagering points that you can redeem for cash. And, I'll have a promo for the big Hong Kong races coming up. And other stuff as well. So, yeah, check out our offers page at twinspires.com. Make sure you opt in. And then, we're still going big. We got, like I said, Turfway Park. I got some feeders and qualifiers for a major light championship going on there later this month. I believe it's later this month. And just have daily handicapping events going on at a whole host of tracks, Oakland, Los Al, Fairgrounds, Mountaineer, Parks, and others. So go to the tournaments tab at Twin Spires, and you can see the details and schedule. Have tournaments with all different types of bankrolls, as low as $40 for this Parks one, up to more.
Well, and, as it happens, yesterday when I was doing the listing for the show and we had Caitlin on to handicap the pick five carryover, and it just so happens that I noticed when I went looking for a Turfway graphic, it just so happened there was a $400 contest yesterday at Turfway. And if you were going to play that, if you were playing that pick five carryover, there was no reason not to get involved in the tournament. And so make sure that you kind of cross-reference your action. I mean, if you've gone ahead and handicapped certain sequences and cards, you might as well play in the tournament.
Yeah. I mean, right off the bat, too, at Turfway, you have a late pick five carryover like that. And then, even in that sequence last night, I mean, it was extremely difficult. Pay 13,000,
almost 14.
Almost 14,000. So, it's great racing. I've definitely got some work to still do on that card. I looked a little bit at tomorrow's program there, but, I love the racing at Turfway.
All right, let's find some spots for. I know you seem to be referencing. Aqueduct.
I'll start at Aqueduct, and I'll just mention some thoughts on the stakes. And the Gopher Wand. I do think that both Chad Brown horses. The thing with the colt, though. I give her credit for out-finishing Candy for second in that race, but I mean, she still lost two of her last four starts at odds on, and I. I'm a little bit dubious of her. You know, I just could see her easily running second or third again. I do think that Shitta Booty has got a big chance because, you know, she's won both her mile starts at Aqueduct by open lengths, and a case can be made. She's just really coming on now. I thought that effort in the Ballerina, I mean, she was so far back early in that race, and she actually made up, you know, offered a pretty good middle move to make up some ground before weakening late, and just really came back with a nice effort last time at Keeneland. She did have Lasix last time, gets it off, but she seems to be coming along. But I'll mention, you know, Linda Rice has two in here. I thought Movie Moxie had a chance for a really good trip on the front end. You know, she might be like sitting second to, you know, somebody to her inside, but, you know, I like how she's, you know, come on in these last two races for Linda Rice, seems to be going real well now and, loves this mile distance. So I thought she was a little intriguing in the go for one at a price, Movie Moxie, potential price 6-1.
No, I like that. And that's our friend, happened to mention Aaron Yagoda earlier this morning, in regards to having co-bred Rodney Jenkins' bandbox. And that when you see that Mare Quest, that's an ownership project of Aaron's. And Movie Moxie has, you know, really been productive for Linda and Aaron. And in fact, it's I'm not sure if she's, you know, if she's going to move toward a sale. If she's now a 7-year-old, so she's going to be 8 January 1st, and she's actually, you know, stayed in really nice form. I mean, especially when you consider she almost ran, you know, a career best last time. So yeah, at 6-1, why not?
Yeah, and then I'll move on to the Remsen next. You know, this is a race with this Keewaydin where I thought his debut in that Traverse Day maiden race was good. I just didn't like his race last time as much as I like that, Steve. And, you know, that field he beat was really, you know, I thought four suspect rivals. That Volt came back and, you know, was well beaten in ninth in a maiden special weight at Churchill. And, you know, he's just got a lot of speed in his pedigree, too. So I look at him, you know, I really like Tux's win. But, you know, even though he's by Tappet, you know, he's out of a money's mare and his second dam's Manage and his third dam's Azure. I mean, it's just a speed lace, you know, it's just a real he's bred for all speed. He's bred for shorter distances on the dam side. The horse I wound up, you know, I could, you know, I'm intrigued by Poster and some other ones, but I wound up going with this Aviator Key. And I just thought, you know, in his first race at Saratoga, but listen, he's having the trouble getting out of the gate well. So that's a logical concern. Maybe it'll be he won't be able to overcome it in this Remsen. But in that first race, you know, he ran okay third in there. That Innovator was second. Who's going to be odds on in the event, just got nailed by a nose by Barnes, you know, in that maiden race. And then in that maiden race, that win on September 28, I heard Grinning reference it. You know, Cyclone State came back and crushed a maiden field next time. And this horse, Hands of Time, he was all green in the stretch, but he ran a good third in there and then came back and won easily on the turf for Clément and is a nice horse. And the horse that ran fourth, that was a good field. Aviator Guy offered a really nice turn of foot at Aqueduct that day. You know, he didn't take to the turf last time, but he's back on dirt. He's going to relish the added ground. He just needs to work out the right trip with Manny Franco, but I gave him a shot in there.
Huh. All right.
And then, you know, I just think Mahima is the filly to beat. I thought her races were really strong, and she finished full run. And, I mean, I just think she's a candidate to overwhelm these. I did go back and watch that Michelle maiden race. That was pretty nice. And even Beauty Reigns has some going for off that hard-fought win. But, you know, I'm not going against a favorite in there. In the Cigar Mile, I did, you know, I'm going to play – listen, post-time – I give him credit for that race. That was a terrible trip from an outside post in that dirt mile. And, you know, Bookham Dano, I'm just worried that Bookham Dano isn't as sharp right now as he was earlier this year. But I'm going to play Mullican and Locked in some in like some pick threes. I'll play them both. I like Mullican. I you know, he's got to get the mile distance, but his trip in the Breeders' Cup Sprint where he broke alertly and then just dropped back, you know, couldn't go with him to 21 and 3 and 44 flat, and then was just all, you know, a rank in a sense before offering a really good run for third. I think that's a big effort. I think Flavian Pratt has a good gauge on this horse, and I think he's going to be able to sit a really good second in the clear to probably this Nelson Avenue, who's going to show speed from the inside. And, I mean, this race just doesn't have a lot of pace in it too. I don't think, I mean, there's going to be some horses up there, but I think Mulligan's going to get a good trip on the front end with Pratt in there. And then I do respect Locke's chances. I'll let his comeback win, and I still think, you know, he's a horse with an upside for Pletcher.
Yeah, he seems to be a little bit of a divisive candidate here. He's sort of a getting.
It's just like interesting, like with him. I mean, I see him running in this race, and you know, they're thinking Pegasus and everything with him, and this will be a real, you know, step in that direction, you know. Yeah. He's going to need to run well in there. So I took a look at Fairgrounds a little bit for tomorrow.
All right, you're throwing me a curveball here. All right. I did not expect the Fairgrounds look, but let me pull up the quick sheet so I've got notations to be able to make.
Yep.
Go ahead.
And then in race number 7, I'm looking at this late pick 5 sequence. I'm probably going to take a shot at it. I like, I think the favorite's vulnerable in there. I do respect Chrome Baby, the 4 horse. But I like this, Uxmal, the 2 horse, for Henry Guillory. I think this is real sneaky. I know he's coming from Prairie and Delta Downs, but I think his form's improving, and I'm going to use the 2. I mean, I'll use the 4-2 on some multi-race tickets, Chrome Baby, because he's got a big chance in there, I thought. But I thought this Usmal was interesting at a price in there, 10-1 in race 7. And then in race 8, I know they got a storm yesterday and it was soft, it was sloppy, but it's supposed to be sunny all day today and overnight, clear overnight and sunny tomorrow. So I'm hoping they'll be on the turf in there because I like this Think Big. You know, he's by Twirling Candy, who's like a 16% turf sire, has like 4 grade 1 winners on turf. And I thought that was a really nice maiden win. 3 starts back, beat a really, you know, I thought, nice field there. You know, I mean, showed a real nice good turn of foot. And then when he came back at Churchill Downs, he got hurt by a slow start. And, he rallied well to be, 5th in that entry level allowance. Last time he went 2 turns, which is too long. But the thing about him is he's out of a turf stakes winner. You know, and I think he's brave to take to the grass. And I think he's going to improve cutting back to a sprint for Michael Stidham and Ben Curtis.
All right.
Number 11 in race 8.
Think Big.
Oakland. I still got to do some work on the Oakland, but I am intrigued. I am excited to see this Happy as a Choice running this could ring the bell stakes, Steve. I thought his allowance win 3 back in June was just a terrific performance. He beat a nice field in there. And then, you know, his Jeff Hilton Memorial effort doesn't show it on the form line, but he had a terrible trip. He all got all caught up in traffic that day and wasn't happy. And I like this Louisville Thoroughbred Society. I think he's got a chance to come on over the winter for John Ortiz. I look for a big effort from him. And I'll mention one horse at Turfway even. They got an allowance race tomorrow, race number 8. Hardy's got a horse in there, big, huge field, number 5, Firster. Finster. Finster, who his first time out, he won at Horseshoe Indianapolis by like nearly 10 lengths. He came back at Ellis in a turf allowance, and he beat a horse, Arabian Prince, that day, who is really starting to come on at Woodbine. He ran a bunch of good races, and then he just won an allowance race last time out. And then last time out on the dirt, you know, he got beat three lengths in there by Bill and that Banjo Chris. That was a pretty solid field. He's going to appreciate switching to the synthetic for Hardy. He's had, you know, won some races at Turfway the last couple winters. And I like number five, Finster, at 6-1 in race eight tomorrow.
9:25 post the eighth race.
Yeah, and then I got a last second Friday push. It's going to come at Oaklawn Park. It's race number five. Let me see if I can find that. Oaklawn Park, race five, number 10, Lover Girl. I think the Pharaoh's Heart is better at 7 furlongs or a mile, the favorite. Always Angels merits respect, but doesn't win often. And this Lover Girl, I thought she was off form in Oaklawn earlier this year, but she won four starts back, and I think her last two starts are encouraging, fast efforts. She's 10-1 on the morning line with Francisco Arrieta, who I thought rode well at Churchill Downs. He didn't get the mounts, but he was 35% top three. He had he won some races. He won a couple races the final week, and you know he was third in the standings last year at Oaklawn area. It was so. I'm playing this number 10 Lover Girl in race five today at Oaklawn.
Well, and as it happens, the fifth is part of the cross country pick five today, and I've got the PPs with me, so I'm looking at Lover Girl's going to have to work out the trip from out there, there's a couple of horses. Well, it's going to be Arietta's going to have to be, he's going to have to be kind of clever in terms of saving ground, because pretty much everybody to his inside, he's got two or three horses that are going to let out a little bit. He might be able to tuck behind a couple of the speeds, right? And get a trip in here.
Yeah, there's some dead closers to his inside,
she's,
too.
Yeah, so she's got a chance. She's a Minnesota bred.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Heck, there's a Texas bred today at Aqueduct. Never has raced exclusively that play that's in there for Linda Rice.
How about that?
That's a Texas bred. So, yeah.
Good horse can come from anywhere, and good opinions come from James Scully, James_Scully 111. And, of course, the Brisnet team and everything at Twin Spires. Lots of options, lots of great handicapping insights, the jury, and you know, if you haven't seen the little videos that everybody does, including Nick Tamaro, a lot of good resources to help you win. James, good luck this weekend.
You too, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
Not at all. James Scully, everybody. Going to check in with Hammer, and Hammer's going to have to answer. He's going to have to answer to to the graded state questions. It's one of the many obligations that Hammer has as kind of the official co-host of the show. Hammer, good morning.
Hi, Steve. How are you this morning?
I'm good. How was the Thanksgiving?
Thanksgiving was quiet this year, but good. I mean, if there's a holiday you can't blow, it's Thanksgiving. I don't care what you do. You got to have good. So it was just a small, just Gene and I, and we cooked a turkey, and we had a nice quiet night, believe it or not. So it was cool.
Excellent.
Usually it's a little more festive, but we were trying to think the last time it was just us two guys. We're going back to, you know.
Young married. Yeah. When you were young married. Yeah. I love it.
Running around doing stuff. So it was all right for a little change. So
why not? You also surprised me. You were the first respondent on Wednesday when the banana cream pie topic came up. You were the first person to send up the flare. I've never had banana cream pie. I was just shocked. Then Migliori and then Stu Slagle. There was an avalanche of anti-sentiment. Shocking to me.
Well, I'm not a big pie guy, but anyway, I'll do Key Lime Pie, which is kind of a
special
there. Yeah. And I'm not, and I asked Gina, I ran into Gina, Banana Cream Pie, and she's like, eh, she's a pecan, you know, give me the pecan pie.
So's Tina. So's Tina. Yep.
And so she's like, yeah, I said, what's the big deal? So you know what you're getting for Christmas, a banana grape pie somehow or another way to get you one. But it's kind of funny because when, you know, when dessert gets offered, if the waitress is one of the restaurants where a waitress will tell you what it is, that never really seems to be like it's one of the offerings. So maybe it just was never put in front of me. My mom never was a big... She baked cakes, but she didn't bake pie. So I don't know. One of those deals. When you don't see it, you know, out
of
your head.
Yeah, out of sight, out of mind. I guess. That's kind of funny. It's very funny. My mother didn't make pies either, as it happens. And it's funny because, of course, her parents were bakers. My grandfather Julius and grandmother Ida, they owned bakeries. And, but my mother was a great cook, not a great baker, because baking is a science. You do not do approximates, when you're baking. If that's your cooking style, you're not going to succeed in the baking arena.
No, I totally agree. There's a thin line between, you know, being a cook and being a baker, because, we all know people that think they're bakers, and then you try their stuff and you go, oh boy, I think, you know, you're at the dinner table and it's like, oh, I gotta eat this and it tastes terrible. Anyway,
that's pretty good. Well, speaking of which, are we prepared to talk calendar decision?
If you want to do it now, so you threw a wrench in this whole for the whole operation.
Not necessarily. I sent up a flyer, a floater.
You did, and so we were talking. I'm talking to
Sunsets,
to Gina, and figured we had taken a few sunset pictures on our last trip, and then just kind of clicked that sunsets. We want to give people a little task. We don't want them, jumping through hoops. And I figured, I got to say, 50% of people listening right now have a sunset picture on their phone that they could send and talk about. But then the dessert thing popped in, and I'm thinking too. And I said, well, how many people have a picture of a dessert on their phone? And so I'm not even a dessert guy. I looked and I got pictures of pies and cakes and cups. I was like, where did this come from? So, I don't know. Maybe I'll have to, before we leave today, we'll come up with it. But I get that it was sunset all the way for me. And then the dessert popped in. And then I made a trip to Porto's on the way home from an errand last night. And so dessert's on my head. So we'll see. But we will leave the show today without a final calendar decision and all the information to get a new Santa Anita calendar. How's that?
All right. All right.
Maybe if a few people want to check in and text away and give us a little hint what they would like. Maybe we'll follow you. Maybe we won't. But I think either one will be fine. And for those of you who don't know what we're talking about and are kind of new, we started a tradition about, 10, 12 years ago. Whatever track I happen to be at, graciously, this back, we're back at Santa Anita that's providing the calendar to try and give out as many calendars as we can for the new year. And of course, Santa Anita's traditionally given out a calendar on opening day, which is the day after Christmas. For years. So, and so we've been trying that probably the last half dozen years and just making you do a small task. And mostly it's a picture of something to send in with your address. And we'll give away the email in a minute, but, we give away however many of, I think the number's going to be about 300 this year that we get. So the first 300 that send in their picture, their address and a little comment, gets a calendar, and it's really taken off, and And it's kind of a cool thing. And like I said, we thank all the tracks involved, but Santa Anita's been the main run. And I actually got a call from the warehouse a couple weeks ago. And I said, I'm thinking to myself, what does he want? He goes, hey, how many calendars you want?
Nice. Year, Very nice.
He remembered that I always put a couple. So we got we're getting 300. So we'll do that. And so listen on. And before we get off the air today, we'll give the task before we got to do it. So.
Well, now you've got a different task, which is, I don't know what time you tuned in this morning, but great estate committee conversation, Rick. Explain Cigar Mile, and
I gotta say, I'm looking at stuff last night, and we do have our great estates committee meeting actually in 10 days on the 16th. Got the books, my office is just covered with stuff, and I figured today, I told you, I gotta have a nice light show today, got to talk about going to Santa Barbara later today and Oakland and this or that, and then 7 o'clock, I get a text from Billy Koch, who's on the Great Estates. I mean, he starts rambling stuff off, and I'm going, okay, just calm down. Then I hear Dave, I'm going, oh. So my all of a sudden, my heart starts pumping. I'm going, oh, great. Didn't you at least expect it? But, it's hard to explain away what goes on. You know, I try to give a synopsis at the end of the meeting and go on. And, there's 11 people on the committee, six TOBA members, thoroughbred owners and breeders, on the committee. And then there's 5 racing people on the committee for a total of 11. And, discussions are had in each category, and you look at a review of the last 5 running. So I'm just going to give a quick synopsis. I can't get really too deep into individual stuff, but right now, but we look at the runnings of the last 5 years of each race, and there's different categories that we look at. The Jockey Club information systems prints these books out for every race that's done in each category, and there's points assigned for graded winners, graded place, graded course stake winners. There's NARC ratings, which is the North American Ratings Committee that puts numbers on races. And, there's kind of some thresholds there. We have to be over a certain number to get into a certain category. There are other statistics that we look at, field size, and, review the races as they go. And if the numbers match and, things like that, they're voted accordingly. There's some patterns involved. There's just so many things involved. And I really wish, and I hear people talk about it, and I can't jump in every time and say, no, that's not what happens. But we do have observers at each meeting. People in their business will write in to the committee. And I don't choose them, but we'll have 5, 6, 7, 8 people sit and watch the goings on. They're not allowed to comment, which is probably very tough to sit there for, literally 10 hours one day and 5 or 6 hours the next day and not. But they watch the process. And I wish, and I made a suggestion, that I'd love to have, a member of the press in there just to watch, not to comment, but just to kind of watch, and they can generally see what goes on. It is an exhausting process. Nothing, and I say nothing, is taken lightly. Literally every single race is looked at, and obviously every single race doesn't need to be commented on or talked about or discussed or voted on even. So you get down to the, you're going to have some discussion on certain races, and a lot of things are brought up. And look, I've said this many times. There were times, when I was on this committee 20 years ago, where I was not that comfortable with the way things were run, and I was out, and it was fine. And then I was asked to come back, and 12, 15 years ago, I've been on and off. I am very satisfied with the way it's done. I mean, not everything that you what you wish for or think that should happen happens, but the process is a very fair one. And I'm talking, we could spend a half hour on a single race and then we vote. And, you know, it comes out your way, or they're not your way, but the way you thought it should go, or it doesn't, and then you move on to the next race. So there's no set agenda, like let's get this track, or let's, you know, attack that division or that race. Theories are talked about, and you know, it's real easy to sit out here and say things, and then when the doors close in that room, it's you know, things got to get done, and the process, not saying it's perfect, and I'm saying it couldn't improve, but the committee is willing to listen to every avenue of discussion. So I can leave it at that. I'm like I said, my mind is so full. We have 19. We're going to review 19 categories of races. So, you know, each, and that's a lot of categories. I just looked back, and somebody made a reference to 1973. There were X amount of races. You know how many categories they gave away Eclipse Award for? Eight. That's it. So, you know, they didn't have turf sprinters, and they didn't have this, and they didn't have, not that we give Eclipse Award winners to that, but we do have those categories. You know, they didn't have 2-year-olds on the grass. They didn't have that. We have a Breeders' Cup race, 2-year-olds on the grass. We've got turf sprinters. We've got female sprinters. So, you know, the categories grow. So, you know, inherently the number of graded races sometimes have to grow too with it. You can't just have a category that's blank when they got a Breeders' Cup race at the end. So there's a lot of stuff in there. I mean, you'd like to be able to blanketly say, hey, I wish we could do this. And maybe we think that way, but we have to ease our way into to getting some things done. I do honestly think in the next year or two, if not this year, next year, you'll see some pretty maybe some major philosophical changes on there, and you know, to adjust more with the way the full crop is. But, you know, it's a very fair process. And, you know, me, if I didn't think it was, I would tell you, or I would just leave. But I do wish, and I'll probably suggest it again, that we do get a member of the press in there, kind of like a pool reporter, not going to, you know, not to report on each individual thing, but just on the way that the whole process works. And I think, I mean, there's people that walk in there, I know, that have observed over the years thinking, oh my God, this is going to be great. And they walk out going, wow, I had no idea, you know, what you guys actually did. So, we have to welcome comments and thoughts that differ from, you know, how you think or how, what things are done. I have no problem with that. I'm just glad that you have people involved and that are passionate to make comments and discuss it. So, like I said, there's no set agenda. We walk in the door and say, okay, we're going to attack this guy, this track or this region or this division. But we're getting close to doing a few things, and, you know, we'll see what happens when the doors close in 10 days.
In a nutshell, Rick,
yes,
if you want to look at this cigar field, I mean, is there a result, a set of horses with grade one, you know, resume marks that would instantly, you know, trip a return to a grade one, or is it a multi-year process at that point?
Yeah, it is a multi-year process. And, you know, looking at it, the cigar, this is a good race. This, in a year, you get me, here we go again. In a year where at the beginning of the meet, I knew, I pull out a letter that I wrote at the beginning of the meet about the number of 3-year-olds that were up for Eclipse Awards last year, and how many were looking to run in January, February. And I think there was 16 nominees. And I think at that point there was maybe 3 or 4 that take into account that retired, got injured or whatever. But the fact was there was 3 or 4 going forward. and which meant that those three-year-olds that were four were not going to contribute heavily to the older horse division this year, and it knew it was not going to be great, and it wasn't. The races weren't deep at all, and we're in that cycle now where some of the older the three-year-olds, when they retire, obviously they don't become four, and the four-year-olds don't become five. So we're in that cycle now where a couple of years of the three-year-olds retiring early has led to, you know, some weak older horse races. And this Cigar Mile is actually is a bright spot in the older division, I think, this year. You know, it's a mile. It's not the traditional mile and an eighth, mile and a quarter type race, which we think of as the classic grade one type older horses. It just one turn mile turned out to be a really, really good race. And yes, it is a process. It's not going to be like, wow, one good race and you're going to be back. You know, a couple of them, and it catches an eye. It's like, wow, let's look at this one. We'll put it on, let's watch this one next time. And if it, you know, has another, you know, good running, then let's think about it. So this, you know, this puts it back on the lookout list, I would think. Sure, there's a lot of grade one winners. You got Sylvester Senior Buscador in there, Bookham Dano's in there. Post Timer ran second in the Breeders' Cup. Mulligan, he's a grade one winner. So things like this really help to say, hey, let's look at that Cigar Mile again here for a while. So like I said, it is a process, and I heard David bring up the Woodward, but it's tough to have. Look, at that point they had, the New York, the Woodward, the Jockey Club, and the Whitney, 1 month apart, all the same race, 1 month apart, all grade one on the dirt. It just, there's no way they could, all races could be that, could continue to be as strong when you offer the same race a month apart in the same division, right? So, anyways, there's a lot of things going on. That's just kind of a synopsis. And I'm sure we'll talk at length in a few weeks when we're out of the, we come out of the cone of silence there in Lexington when we get going. And it's an intense couple days. And, they send out the books. And like I said, everyone on the committee's going through the books right now and kind of reacquainting themselves with the races and what they look like on paper, and I look at charts and all kinds of things. So it's not a simple process. It's not just, hey, let's do this, let's do that. I just want to get that across. And I think if you do talk to some of the people that have been in the room and watched, a lot of them, like I said, are like, wow, this is a pretty intense deal. So that's more than I thought I was going to say this morning about that. But there you go.
I appreciate it. I thought it was a unique opportunity as a follow up to Andy's visit Tuesday and what came up today as well. And David Aragon is next, so we'll see what David wants to opine.
I offer any other David. I don't know David Aragon. I like his work, and I appreciate his everything he does in the game, and Andy, of course, and Dave. I have no problem sitting down one on one with him. If they want to sit down for a few hours, I'll go over the whole thing with him and show him, why things happen and what they. Sometimes you have a, even I'll go, wow, this is good, and you open up the books and you start looking at the numbers, and they're either like, whoa, way better than you thought, or they're not quite as good when you dig a little deeper. So, I have no problem sitting down and explaining what these things look, what it looks like. So I offer that out. And, the more transparency that we can do on this, the better. I mean, I'm not looking to hide anything.
No, of course not.
At all. So, but that's it.
All right.
So we can move on. Can we move on?
Yeah, go ahead. You got the app.
No, I thought it was just going to be a nice year. So we're before, which we have we're Friday. So Sunday headed to Arizona. So we'll have three shows there in the morning. I was thinking it was 8 to 11, but it's 7 to 10. So that's,
right.
Trying to get that in my head. Then I have a 3.5 hour presentation of a racing secretary summit on Monday morning. So I've been preparing for that as well. So, I got stacks of stuff going on crazy. So we're taking a little break. Gina and I were driving up to Santa Barbara, or as any guy that was, went to college in Southern California, Santa Barbara, as it's known, throughout the Southland here. But we're driving up to Santa Barbara to see Molly Tuttle tonight at a show on campus, and just to kind of get out a little bit, come back and get ready for that. Dead and Company's back at the Sphere. Anybody, all the Deadheads out there, March, April, and May, 18 more shows. So, get ready. Tickets go on sale next week, so that was kind of anticipated. But I heard you talking about Oaklawn yesterday with, who was that, Jason?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, it's still hard for me to, and probably I'm not the only one to think Oaklawn, you don't think December 6th, right? Still. When I worked there the first couple of years I was there, it was the traditional meet, open up in late January and end, in the middle of April, 5 days a week, intense. It was great. And they expanded, to December and did the 3 day week, Friday, Saturday, Sunday schedule for, actually going to be like 6 months. And, it is great if you're there, but it was, for me, it was, I couldn't stay in Hot Springs for 6 months just because I just didn't want to be that away. I love the city. It was kind of cool little spot, but, they've done a wonderful, job of Jason said, if you haven't been there in a while, you need to go and check out the hotel, the hotel / casino racetrack. It's all right in the same area. You don't have to go far. You don't have to go far. You don't have to go anywhere. And one of the strange phenomena that I ever saw was when the race goes on, the people leave the casino to come out to watch the race. It's just great. And, just a great atmosphere there in Hot Springs for racing. The 3 days a week got me. It wasn't the 3 days a week. Racing was the 4 days a week, not racing. So I wish they would, add another day a week and get it going. They talked about, adding some more money to the 3 year old divisions out there with the Rebel and the Arkansas Derby, which they've really established that as a way to get, to the Kentucky Derby. I wish they'd decided to put, I wish they would have put some more money into a race like the Count Fleet, maybe made $1 million sprint, and gone a different direction with some of the money and just said, hey, let's do this and be the only $1 million sprint out there besides the Breeders' Cup and maybe keep some horses home or give them sprinters a reason to stick around, for a high price sprint in March or something like that. But, they'll develop that and, with the Apple Blossom and everything else. It's, if you haven't been to Oaklawn or haven't been in a while, you should definitely make the trip. It's a very unique spot, and I enjoyed my time there. It just got too long, so had to go. But for those that love it, you got December, you got December through May to get to Oaklawn this year. So very cool. Los Alamitos opens up. Do they open up today too?
Yeah.
Yeah, they open up today too for I think 9 days. To just kind of fill the gap in here. As you know, it's racing and, heaven forbid we take a, 3-4 week gap in between a meet or two just to get it refreshed, but we can't do it. Gotta go. And Los Alamitos, fits the bill to fill in a couple 3 day weeks until we head into the Santa Anita meet and starts out right away with a nice race, the Starlet. This is a race that, Mr. Baffert is, figured prominently, ever since, this race came on the schedule at Hollywood. And he's won, I believe he's won the last 7, Starlets. And, he's got 3 of the entrants in here, but, I was looking at the race and, isn't this a race? Have you been at this race before?
Oh, bunches. Yeah, this is my favorite. Yeah. This is one of my favorite races.
Yeah, that's what I thought. And maybe just the way the schedule rolls here with Arizona, you used to come right out to Arizona, there would be run then. That's what I thought. But I'm looking at it. I was going up and down, and you know, sometimes I don't know. Maybe the thing is just jumping right out at you. But you know, Vodka with a Twist has run some real nice races the last few here, including a nice second in the Breeders' Cup. The fact that Phil D'Amato runs her back here lately leads you to believe that she's doing great. And you know, I don't know what the price is. I printed before the price, so. Was she about 3-1 or 5-2 or something?
Favorite, yeah.
Oh, okay. And at what price?
5-2.
5-2. Okay, so that's what I figured. It kind of has that kind of, you know, 5-2 favorite type of race. But you know, I'm looking around. I'm going, I think she's probably the horse to beat in here. Why not? You know, tough to say that when you're looking at a guy that's won seven in a row. But you know, 10 mup. You know, went off at, was 2-1 last time and you know, non-compliant, ran away from the outside there. So I'm not sure. I mean, you can't see anything second time going around two turns. Maybe you wonder about the distance a little bit. Nooney on the outside, you know, same thing, ran some big, you know, big races early and, you know, on the stretch out, same thing. I don't know. Can she do it? But I like the fact that Martin Garcia gets back on. He rode her in the Oak Leaf. He's really good at speed horses, and he's really good with Bob's horses. He knows how to take them forward. So the horse kind of off the Baffert discussion, that Practical Dream, Tim Yachtin, he's had a really good year. You know, of course, with that turf horse, and then he's run some of his juveniles have run well too. So Practical Dream, who's stepping up off the 7 furlong victory in the Desi Arnaz, could be okay in there too. So a competitive bunch, and lots of times, let's face it, they're not. But this one is.
No, I thought so too.
Right. And you've got a great name in here too, which I can't believe this name was still available after all these years. Aunt Mo.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, how's that still available?
Uncle Mo, Aunt Mo. I know.
I'll try and make it over there. I know it's a fun little meet over there. Everyone's in a good mood, and you know they have a great little restaurant over there. And that's kind of a little fun place to hang out on the weekend, really.
Absolutely.
To watch them. You know, are you going this year?
No, I can't. I can't. I'm leaving for Arizona Sunday.
I didn't mean for this race.
No, I can't. I've got to go to Remington.
Okay. When's that? Is that next Friday or?
Yeah. Now after Arizona, Wednesday afternoon, I'll head to Oklahoma City, and we'll be Thursday, Friday, Saturday at. And we'll come back Saturday actually, but Thursday, Friday at Remington.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. Arizona's late this year, just the way the calendar fell. 9, 10, 11. Usually, it seems to be earlier, but so everything's kind of scrunched in there. So we'll be, we're Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and it's going to be another huge turnout there. They tell me, you know, everything's sold out left and right, and it's turned into be a very fun event. I'm glad that my duties are on Monday. They have been the last few years, so kind of intense at the beginning, but then it mellows out as we go along. And I might add, this is the 50th anniversary of the Racetrack Industry Program. So they put on a big push to get a lot of the alumni there from through the years. And there's going to be apparently a big turnout. So we're having a few events for that. So we'll be able to speak to a lot of former Arizona people. So that'd be kind of fun.
Excellent. I'm looking forward, as always.
Yeah. And I just checked the calendar. I mean, the weatherman on my little weatherman on our phones, and it's going to be like 72 or something like that. You know, tough stuff to move into, right, this time of year.
Wow.
Perfect Arizona weather.
Absolutely. All right, Hammer, let me get to, I've got to get to David and Barry Spears, and I will see you Sunday afternoon or not till Monday?
Yeah. No, I get there Sunday afternoon. I have time to watch a football game or two and relax and make sure everything's set up for us, right?
Exactly. All right, good.
All right.
We'll see you there. And
absolutely.
When we'll give the official decision on the calendar?
Yeah, well, you know what? Let's just get it out of the way. We're going to do sunsets.
All right.
We're gonna do sunsets.
All right.
So, quickly, we'll repeat this next week, but we would send in a picture of a sunset. Tell us where it is, you know, where it came from and all that stuff. Send it in to SantaAnitaCalendar@yahoo.com. And please include your name, obviously, and your address. Many people get so excited they send in and they forgot to send their address. So name, address, and a phone, and your favorite sunset. And that's it. And, you know, little comment about the show is always appreciative. And it's on. Flag is up. Let's go. And we'll repeat that next week.
Well, I will publish my fabulous shot from the convertible on Route 66. I've got a spectacular sunset
shot.
There you go. I'll put that up.
I think everyone can find it. And if you don't have one, you know, just go stand outside about 7 hours or 8 hours or 10 hours and you'll get one.
Well, so, you got the Gemini meteor shower coming up too next week. In fact, I think next Friday and Saturday night are the top nights for the Geminis.
Now, is it me or is there like a meteor shower every 2 weeks now?
Well, this is Geminis. The Leonids and the Geminids are pretty spectacular. And when you live out where we do, it's so easy to go to some place that doesn't have ambient light and really see them. Of course, it's, you know, a lot of times it'll be 30 degrees, but so you got to dress for it. But it's pretty cool, actually. You go up.
Well, you know, Tucson's a dark city. So
that's true.
Meaning it's a dark city. The lights there are purposely not allowed in certain places. So they can see up. There's a telescope up on the mountain. Mount Kitt, is it? That they do that on purpose so you can see more. So we'll
Very
see
cool.
a lot of the desert out there, too. So anyway, we'll see you. We'll talk to you in a couple of days.
Excellent. Thanks, Rick.
You bet.
There we go. Let me get David in here. We're now tight. David and Barry will get some final opinions on the weekend. And now you, for those that were curious about the graded stakes elements, you just got your answer from Hammer. David Aragona joins us. David, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How's it going?
Excellent. How was Thanksgiving?
Thanksgiving was great. A pretty small gathering with some family here in New Jersey. Did some cooking. It was good.
Nice. Well, on to what used to be Holiday Fest, but it's Cigar Mile Day, and it is a really good card. Let's get your steak opinions.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'll work backwards. The Cigar Mile came up a fantastic race, which is kind of funny since they downgraded it to a grade two. We've had just stellar fields the last couple of years, and certainly the case this year. You know, I'll be interested to see how they bet this race. I'll be honest, this was a tough morning line to make because you've got horses coming in from all different directions, and it's really hard to compare them. I kind of feel like Post Time is the most reliable of them and is kind of the horse to beat in this race. I know he hasn't really gone off at particularly short prices when he's tried the toughest company before, but I mean, I think bettors kind of have to realize at this point, this horse is really good, and the mile on one turn just seems to be right up his alley. I'm not so concerned about the outside post, given the long run down the backstretch. Just seems like he fits this race really well. It is the end of a long campaign. I know some people maybe don't love the idea of taking horses out of the Breeders' Cup that are kind of tacking this race on at the end of the year, but I mean, this is one that I think you can trust. This horse just shows up every time. So we'll see how much pace develops. I kind of feel like he's the most likely winner. So we'll see where the price lands. But I'm not against Mulliken, who I did make the slight favorite in here. I'm not that concerned about the stretch out to a mile for him. I know Brissette has always wanted to get him out to this distance. I was actually more concerned about the turn back to six from the Breeders' Breeders' Cup, because I worried that what did happen would be the case, that he would just kind of get run off his feet in the early stages. But he projects to get a much better trip in this race, because there is speed in here, but I don't think there's so much speed that they're going to run away from Mulliken on the front end this time. So we should get that good tracking trip. And I think he's going to run well, and kind of sticking with the theme of liking horses out of the Breeders' Cup. The horse that I made my top pick is actually Señor Buscador, who, while he is coming out of the Breeders' Cup, he isn't really at the end of a long, consistent campaign, because he took that long break during the summer. And the Breeders' Cup Classic felt like the race where he kind of finally cycled back up into top form after not really running so well in the Pat O'Brien and the California Crown. But the fact that he ran so well in the Breeders' Cup Classic, going a distance that I think is too far for him, and not really with an ideal trip, because that was a race that was falling apart. He was sort of trying to make a run through along the inside, but I think he wanted to be coming around horses the way that Sierra Leone did. He stayed on pretty well for fifth. Arguably ran just as well in the Breeders' Cup Classic this year as he did last year. And you look at his Cigar Mile following the Breeders' Cup in 2023, and I know he lost to Hoist the Gold by four lengths, but you can make the argument Señor Buscador ran the best race, given the fact that he was so wide every step of the way over that rail bias track and finished well clear of the others. I like this distance for him. I think there's enough pace, and I feel like he's the one that's going to be the right price. So I made Señor Buscador my top pick.
I don't have any argument. I mean, he's certainly among those that, you know, that are easy to make a case for. He's going to be the best price.
Yeah. And then we can move on to the Demoiselle. I mean, you're going to have a big favorite in there,
yeah,
in Ohima. Untested, really, so far. And if you watch her replays, she has been just dominant over the rivals that she's been facing, really geared down to the finish each time. You know, the kind of performances when you see the clip of the final 16th is just kind of, you know, bettors can't resist. And she's just going to be extremely short pricing here. But, I mean, she is trying something new for the first time. The stretch out from 7 furlongs to 1 1/8 miles, I don't think should be underestimated as a factor, especially since she's a daughter of Munnings, who is a very versatile sire, but you don't necessarily think about Munnings getting tons of, you know, 2-turn stakes winners or 9-furlong stakes winners. So I think she'll run well, and I think she's the most likely winner, but I'm reticent to take too short a price on a horse like this. And I was looking up some stats for Brad Cox in Racing Form Formulator, and it's really hard to find a bad stat for Brad Cox when you look up formulator stats for him in all sorts of categories. He just does well across the board. So I always find it notable when I find a negative stat for Brad. And first time route in a graded stakes on the dirt, he is just 4 for 28 with a 98-cent ROI on a $2 wager. So that makes me a little bit reticent to take her. And if I'm looking at for all alternative, I don't think that there are that many ways to go in here. I'm actually most interested in the horse that finished behind Mohima last time, Liam in the Dust, who's drawn right outside of her in this race. She was closing pretty well in that 7-furlong affair, got a little bit outrun early. I think the pace was a little quick for her, but I like the way that she was staying on. I know that her 1-2-turn race in the Alcibiades looks like a total disaster on paper. When you go back and watch that replay, she got totally steadied out coming around the far turn, and Flavian Pratt just eased her from there. The margin of defeat is not a true representation of her ability going longer. She's bred to get more distance. To me, she looks like one that wants to go longer. She's working really well coming into this. And I just think if you like somebody outside of the favorite here, they're going to be a fair price.
I agree. It's interesting that you gravitated in her direction. I thought, you know, Beauty Reigns intrigued me just because she's a slightly unknown quantity.
Yeah, she was game on debut. I thought she ran pretty well that day. Hard to know what the quality of that field was because it was primarily first-time starters that were behind her. And it's a big ask, but Belmont has pretty good stats stretching horses out like this, so I won't be surprised when she runs well. And even Ballerina Doro is somewhat interesting all the way on the outside. She's trained well on dirt, and they're finally getting her on that surface.
How about the boys' race?
I mean, for a pretty small field, I think you've got five really interesting contenders, and obviously the horses that are drawing closest to the inside. Kia Waden is the one to beat, but kind of a similar situation with Mohima, where he's a standout on speed figures, but he's making this jump in distance from one turn, seven furlongs, out to the two-turn mile and an eighth. And I don't think it could be underestimated, especially for a horse like this that doesn't exactly have the profile of one that you would peg to get better going nine furlongs. And you look at the dam side pedigree, it's a little bit more one-turn oriented. I mean, his best half siblings are Heart Rhythm, who was a very good dirt sprinter, Heart Full of Stars, another one of his best, really up to seven furlongs or a mile, definitely not a two-turn mile or an eighth type. And we're still learning about Instagram as a sire. I don't know if his progeny are going to necessarily get better going this far. So I think he could run well in here, and his speed is definitely going to make him dangerous in this small field, but I don't see much value there from a price standpoint. I think actually Chad Brown's other horse, Aviator Guy, is a little bit more interesting. I get why they tried the turf last time, because he kind of has this, you know, big loping action to his stride that might make you think turf, but obviously he didn't really move up on that surface, even though he actually ran okay in there with a wide trip. But he seems like one that really does want to run all day, and while he might not have the natural talent of Kia Waden, I think that the distance suits Aviator Guy much better. The horse that I put on top, though, is Studley Do-Right. This is a horse that I was always kind of surprised that he was running as well as he was early in the season, because everything about him, from pedigree to his physical when you see him or to watching him run, I mean, he just looks like a horse that wants to run all day. So it was kind of surprising to see him win the 5.5 furlong Tremont. And I know he didn't really progress from there through the summer, but he had some subtle trips along the way, got completely sawed off in traffic in the stretch of the hopeful. And I thought he finally got back on track with the blinkers last time in the Nashua, handled the mile the way that I thought he would. And now he's stretching out to the nine furlongs, and I'm pretty confident he's going to handle it. And he might be the horse that kind of gets lost in the shuffle here, because he doesn't have that obvious upside or that sexy look that a lot of others do in here. And he could be 4 or 5 to 1 in this race, and I think that's a very fair price on him.
I love hearing you say that. Out of curiosity, given this roster and that we just finished up, you know, the second pool of the Derby futures, did you peruse those, and what were your thoughts? Because he was 197 to 1. I played Kia Waden at 107 to 1. I mean, they're it's funny, the horses that were out of sight, out of mind, went off at crazy prices.
They did. You know, I kept meaning to take a deeper look at the future wager last weekend, and I had a lot of other things going on outside of racing that it kept kind of getting away from me, and the pool closed before I really got to think about it. But looking back, there were some bets I might have made. I mean, it's kind of crazy to be looking at some of the horses running this weekend, that among all the horses racing at Aqueduct that were part of that Derby future wager, the shortest price, not even in the Remsen, he's running today in that allowance race for Brad Cox, that Uncle Jim, who I think closed at 30 to 1 in the future wager off a 63 buyer. Okay, maybe he'll do better here. I did pick him today, but it's kind of interesting that horse isn't even entered in the Remsen. But yeah, I think it's very tough for people to get a handle on the horses that will be effective come Derby time next year at this point in the season. So probably would have been wise for me to get involved. I just couldn't quite get to that point to place the wager last weekend.
Yeah, that Uncle Jim race goes just in about an hour and 15 minutes, actually, hour and 20 minutes, goes as the third. And it's got Cyclone State in there, too. Kind of a solid, it's nice to have a two-year-old allowance, frankly. David, finally, a quick glance at the Gopher Wand, which is a nicely matched bunch.
Yeah, I don't really have any knock against the two likely favorites in here. Tizzy in the Sky obviously has to come off a layoff, but she seems like the controlling speed of this race. Probably a little better going the two-turn mile or an eighth than she is the one-turn mile, though she ran just fine in this race last year, and I think she makes sense. Occult obviously fits on class. It took her a few starts to sort of get going this year, and while she hasn't won yet, she's run well just about every time, and the mile around one turn seems to suit her as well. As long as some pace develops, I guess we'll see how that works out. I'm going to be very interested to see where Linda Rice decides to run the number 7, Ain Broke. I haven't yet seen reporting on whether this horse is going to run here or in the Garland of Roses on Sunday, going 6 furlongs. She's cross-entered. I think this is probably the better spot, unless she's entered the Garland of Roses because Linda feels like she's not really fit to go a mile and she just wants to get a tightener into her. We'll see how that works out. If she does go here, I would view it as a minor vote of confidence. This horse got a nightmare trip when she was last seen in the Ruffian, just off a little slow, got steadied, and then shuffled back. And it was just, she was never in the right spot. And I think after all that, she was even reported to have bled in the race. And awful long layoff here, but she's got races going back to last winter that would make her highly competitive against this group. She's drawn well outside, and maybe with that last race showing, she could be a decent price. So she's where I would land if she does run here. If not, I don't really have a clever opinion outside of Kizzy and this guy in a cult.
Fair enough. David Aragon, a horse to watch, and of course, we'll mention that you're landed and established on Blue Sky now as well.
Yeah, you know, I checked it out. Some friends recommended it to me, and it's a place that's a little bit easier to scroll without having your blood pressure rise. So I'm doing some posting there. A lot of the same content I post on Twitter or X, but some supplemental. So yeah, you can find me there under the same handle.
Horse to watch .bsky.social. I just got established too. I appreciate it, David. Good luck this weekend.
Yep, good luck everybody playing. Good talking to you, Steve.
David Aragona, folks. Let's round out the morning with a Barry Spears visit. We'll get opinions on the two Tampa stakes. Let me pull out the Tampa. We got about 7-8 minutes. Perfect window to check in with Barry as the Tampa meet is now, you know, pretty well underway. Barry, how you faring?
Hey, what's up, Steve?
I wasn't gonna adjourn without getting to you for a couple of opinions, the inaugural and the Sandpiper.
Always good time. I like this series. It always kicks off the meet there. I'm actually on my way down to Gulfstream. I'm driving.
Oh, I love it. All right, nice. You gonna spend the weekend there? Or you gonna?
Yeah. All right. Definitely spend the weekend down here. My wife's birthday was on Monday, so we're gonna celebrate. Go to Joe's Stone Crab tonight. Ah. Kind of hang out.
Nice. Very nice. Don't forget the key lime pie because it wouldn't
hurt
a baby.
Favorite part. And Chuck's chicken. And Chuck's $8 chicken.
I love it. Talk about the two-year-olds, and it's a very good two-year-old card. You've got maiden races, you've got allowances as well, and then the two stakes. But there's four maiden specials, but the inaugural goes as the sixth, the Sandpiper is the eighth.
Yeah, those are really good races. Actually, I thought the Philly race was a little bit better competitive-wise. I know the entries for the sixth race for the inaugural were kind of light, but the Phillies race looks pretty good.
Now, flesh it out.
Well, in the inaugural, you know, you got the big favorite. In the inaugural, you don't have the big favorite, the donut horse.
Donut guy.
I got mixed up. I had to pull it up on my phone, but yeah. Donut God is in a precarious position of being the fastest horse, speed figure wise, than any other horse in the race. And it's a lot of weight to have after just breaking your maiden. And they made the horse 6-5, which probably should be favored, but that's a lot of pressure on a horse like that, especially when there's other horses in the race that look like they might have some run, especially the second choice. The three, Naughty Rascal, been running with some good horses, has some stakes, you know, experience, and probably will be the horse to beat, I think. Although I think Donut God will probably get most of the action. The second choice, to me, looks a little bit better.
Yeah, there's the horse on the outside of Gary Gattese's, the Country House gelding, Epitaph. That race, the stake tribe at Aqueduct actually fits pretty well, the Futurity. I thought Epitaph was okay in here.
Yeah, I think that horse is really eligible to improve, especially switching to the dirt. Gary does a pretty good job of doing this. The horse does have some speed, and, you know, I don't think Donut God's going to get away with anything easy, despite what his lone speed figure looks like. I mean, there's some horses in here that can run a little bit. So I think the pace sets up really well for Naughty Rascal. Epitaph could kind of sit a good trip too from the outside and kind of clock everybody else and get a good run at it.
I agree. Then we go to the girls race, Sandpiper, and this one a little bit more balanced in terms of the morning line, and probably a few more candidates at attractive prices.
Yeah, I mean, this race is a lot more competitive than the inaugural, but I thought Paradise City kind of looks a little bit better than these on paper, and is eligible to improve off of that last race, and I think that'll do the horse a real lot of good.
Just and I'm scrolling back and forth. Dancing Magic from Mike Campbell seems a candidate as well.
Yeah, absolutely. There's quite a bit of speed in this race. These two-year races get a lot of heat up front typically. I mean, you see it at Churchill, even in the stakes races. That happens. If you can pinpoint horses that can pass others, you're probably going to be on the right ones. Once the horses learn how to pass, that's when they understand how to race a little bit. Some get it early, some don't. So, you know, that's one thing to keep an eye on, especially with these young two-year-olds.
You got the same kind of issues to deal with in terms of a surface switch when it comes to Owen Hardy, who's obviously red hot. He's got a big price in here. Tessa Tora, who won at First Asking up at Presque Isle, now gets a chance on dirt. This is a Medaglia d'Oro out of a bridled song mare. In fact, not just any mare, but Octave. And she's kind of obscured in here. And there's no reason to think that, you know, the first dirt doesn't suit her at a big price.
Yeah, I mean, the pedigree screams that this one should love this. I don't see why not. And like you said, this horse is going to fly under the radar quite a bit because of those synthetic races. But it translates a lot. You know, you see everybody coming over from Gulfstream kind of doing the same thing. Yeah, I mean, they've been running on synthetic quite a bit. Over the summer, and you know, getting the dirt over at Tampa might be the move. You know, a little bit of class relief, and they kind of fit. And you'll see a lot of big outfits ship horses over there just to see where they're at, kind of get a litmus test.
Well, the Tessa Tora is a silly price. It's got my man Willie Martinez, my favorite.
Chili Willie.
He's the best. Barry, I appreciate it. Have a great weekend down in South Florida, and we'll check in before the end of the year.
Sounds good, my man. Thank you for having me.
Not at all. Urban Handicapper, everybody, Barry Spears, as we wrap up a full and busy morning. Of course, that started with the news of Rodney Jenkins passing. We'll talk to you on Monday from the University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program Symposium. And we'll do, especially early morning, we'll do a lot of recapping, and then we'll wade into the industry topics. Thanks to Nick Tamaro, Callie Francois, Dave Grunning, James Scully, Barry Spears just now, David Aragona and Hammer, Santa Anita Calendar at Yahoo with a picture of a sunset, or I guess a sunrise, either one. Thanks to Brian, who pitched in these last couple of days, on the engineering front, and good luck this weekend, everybody. I'll work on the. I'll definitely post the aqueduct stuff for tomorrow, and I'll talk to you Monday from Arizona. Thanks.
breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.